Good evening, everybody. It is Wednesday, August 16th, 2017, and you are listening to Three Geeks Senate. The Senate is now in session. Hi, my name is Brian J. Cano.
My name is Paul Bradford.
My name is Robert Buxar.
And in this session, we had the good fortune to talk to one of our, it's safe to say, one of our cinematic heroes of a time, Cindy Morgan, best known as Lacey Underall in Caddyshack, and Yuri in Tron. And hey, you want to hear how it went? Take a listen. Be your future. Make your future.
Okay. So,
all right.
Paul is a celebrated scowler. This we've learned.
Yes.
Well, yes.
That's awesome.
I build things. That's what I do. But then it's just I like showing them off. Well, K9 was actually moving, so he was actually, it was the first time he was actually remote controlled and around people. And then I realized you were there, because I didn't even know you were going to be there. And when I found out, oh god, I have to go find Cindy. So I went everywhere with this remote controlled dog, try and find her.
Oh, I'm so glad you did. I mean, it was so much fun. I know a couple of people I'm going to be talking to are still awesomely huge fans of your show, and just great talking to you guys. So I've got you, I've got Brian, and who else am I hearing?
Robert.
Robert. Did we lose Brian completely?
I'm back.
Recording
oh, he's back.
Oh, he's in.
I'm back, baby.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm back, baby.
I'm back, baby.
I was asking if you guys are actually techs or what, because I was just checking. You know
You know, we play tech guys on TV, and in real life, I think we are tech guys.
We are, but we don't play tech guys. We're reality TV. It's like, oh dear. Anyway,
tell me which show. Is there a show I should know about? A reality?
Which
TV
one?
Show?
No, we're not recording TV anymore yet. Anyway.
But, oh, Brian, I'm looking forward to that.
Brian was also part of Brian, you were part of Haunted Collector, weren't you?
Yes, that's currently heavily airing in reruns on Destination America. So every couple of days, someone goes, "Oh, you're on TV right now." I said, "I am." Oh, all right. Hey, cool.
I was on Chiller this morning.
Nice.
Apparently, GHI was on Chiller. That was fun. Every now and again, you get photographs of you on the TV, and you're like, "Ugh."
Yeah. No, I know the feeling. It's like it takes a lot to be able to look at me playing anything, any number of things that have nothing to do with me. It's like. Yeah, I know. I don't want to see it. I really don't. But, you know, when you get a little distance from the work, like a few years, then I can go back and look.
Well, they always get the screenshot at the wrong time with the double chin and the frown and the just like literally the worst time to get the screenshot. Like,
boys, let me tell you a few things about lighting and camera angle. The camera should be at your eyes or above. And lighting.
Yes.
I've been a pain in everybody's butt since I started in television when I was 21. Because once I learned to run camera, because sometimes in Rockford, Illinois, one of the camera guys wouldn't show. So I would run behind and I would sit there for the three shot. I was doing weather really badly. And I would sit there for the three shot and then run around and reset it and then run back like I was behind the desk the whole time. When you're working at a station that size, like Rockford, Illinois, you get to do everything and learn everything. It was awesome.
Well, that's right. You was a meteorologist, or at least you gave me meteorological news.
Let me explain. My ratings were awesome, but this is how it worked. After my weather show, the director would come down with a scowl on his face, much like yours, with a Sharpie in his hand, and he would walk to the board and write Atlantic, Pacific, because I would say whatever the hell I felt like. My goal was just to keep talking. I switched the oceans. Yeah, in Ohio and Iowa didn't fare very well either. And he would make all those noises. I said, "Hey, how are my ratings? My ratings are good. Get back upstairs and shut up." So, yeah, that was terrible. I mean, just I could point and talk. And that was it. That's all I had going for me.
Well, you DJed as well, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I ended up doing Morning Drive in Chicago, which at the time was the second largest market in like the world, but because of the 180 degree broadcast, you know, at the time, obviously no internet like now. So you had to go by those towers, which by the way, are the same size. I'm looking out at my window and they're the same exact size they always were. So Morning Drive, I flipped on, I got there at 5:45, flip on the tower at the Hancock Center, take the readings, meter readings, pull some news, you know, it was wire copy at the time. And I was spinning discs, you know, and ran with my board, read the news, did the whole thing. It was awesome.
I heard you just upped and left.
Well, there was a rumor about something about. Yeah. I mean, I was working for the Chess Checker record people. The movie Cadillac Records, I believe, is their story. And I was doing morning drive, pulling numbers against the big boys, making $135 a week. So, you know, I'm trying to pull a commercial in here or there. And I get a call on Saturday morning that they're taking my overtime away and giving it to some guy.
Yeah.
And I went, really? and so it was a love-hate relationship I had with them. I had the best time on that show because it had such a great audience. And I would get yelled at by my boss, like, every morning. He was the owner's son, the station manager.
Right.
And so every morning, I'd be like, I'm not even going to go into more details, but basically I'd go in his eye and I'd lean in the window and I go, yes, Terry. Yes. How many ratings? Good. See you later. And he wouldn't let me get Beretta's Bird on the radio show. And I thought that would be awesome. I can do whatever I want. He goes, Cindy, birds can't talk. I said, really, Terry? <You know>? That's not the point. This is radio. I can make it do anything I wanted. So he refused. From that day forward, when I pulled my wire copy in the morning, every single day there was, and I would say, and today's animal segment is, it was in the news every single day. Now, the audience in Chicago didn't know what I was up to, but they clearly knew I was up to something and they enjoyed it, you know, because they knew I was screwing with somebody. The station manager.
So that brings a question to mind, and I think you kind of touched upon it just now. I read you have a degree in communications. Now, over the past 30 years,
yeah.
The way we interact has really changed greatly. Like you said,
yeah.
There was no internet back then. So do you feel it's easier or more difficult for an aspiring actor or someone in showbiz to break into the business today? Or like there's so much connectivity. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you just put the one little monkey wrench in it, an actor, aspiring actor. Actors and communicators, those are two different skill sets. And not every actor is comfortable speaking. I went into broadcasting. I was accepted to the Illinois Institute of Technology, and at the last minute, chickened out, four girls, all guys, and made a hard left, and went to Northern Illinois. And I came into school with a stammer, and I came out in broadcasting. Communications was a joke major because that nobody got a job. I had jobs. I had three jobs while I was going to school. My sorority sisters were really angry because I would never go to any. I didn't want to go to meetings anyway. But I was always covering a school board meeting or a hospital board meeting or something. But yeah, that's a totally different skill set. So and I apply the same principles to the internet. It's basically speaking as if you're speaking to one person, communicating honestly, but there are parameters that have to be respected. And I had an interview just before this. I was talking to a guy who started in radio about when I did, and we had ethics pounded into our heads because this is a media determined society. You have to respect the fact that, you know, for example, and I gave him this example, which I hate to use, but if somebody walks into a movie theater and yells fire, they're going to be in jail for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
But anybody can say anything on the internet, and we are a media-determined society, and just by virtue of being there, it gets in. Maybe subconsciously, but it gets in. And there's a responsibility. We were taught responsibility about what we said. Just be ready to back it up, make sure it's the facts, and... you know, especially during the news, you know, that's the news, not, you know, an editorial. So, and now I'm looking at this going, so I only have two rules in my page. I don't sell sex. I don't sell religion. And if you want to have a fight, it better be about sports, you know, knock it off, you know, and I kick some people off the page and they've apologized and come back. So it's entertainment. I'm not preaching anything. It's just talking to people like they're your friends, and you guys know, I mean, when you got somebody following I get all my information from people who are following me, all the photos I have, all the news stories I have, all the things that are going on that I don't get first. I've got a pipeline directly. I mean, I get all kinds of interesting pieces of information, so I'm very, very grateful because they communicate back.
I'm a huge fan of your fan art, actually. I notice there's a lot of the Yuri Lives
Yes, yes.
I love that. And in fact, I introduced that to the guys just a little while ago. In fact, I introduced it to Rob. Just because I don't think he had quite the concept of how big Yuri Lives really is.
Oh, go to Tumblr. If you guys can go to the official Cindy Morgan Tumblr page. I put a lot of it up there. Or look up Cindy Morgan on Tumblr. The fan there, it's a different demographic and very much into creating, taking what they see and to a whole nother level. And it goes to storylines and all sorts of art forms. And yeah, it's really, really interesting fan art there. And then there is Tumblr After Dark, which is a whole nother animal.
Oh, different animal.
Yeah.
I've never even heard of that.
Yeah, well, you got to know a guy. Well, actually,
I know a guy.
Yeah, you got to know a guy, as we say in Chicago. So yeah, because people will come up to the table, and when you're on the front lines, you know, Paul, they'll tell you directly, you know, well, many things.
Yes.
But luckily, there's a table in between you,
right.
And you learn quite a bit. And that's how I found out about Tumblr and opened the page up to that, because Tron appeals to that audience specifically.
That's the thing. I think for me, Tron was probably one of the first. I mean, what we're talking 82, right?
Yes. Released in
82,
correct.
Released in 82. Okay, so, I mean, I saw Tron before I saw Caddyshack, which I think it was the other way around for the other guys, because they're a lot older than I am. But
he loves saying that.
But that was, for me, I was, what, 3 or 4 at the time.
And, that must have had a huge impression.
And it was massive. It was computers. I mean, and I think that, for me, sort of paved the way for my geekness, basically. Even before Doctor Who was Tron. Mm-hmm. My first Doctor Who experience was, I think, the year later in 83. So, you know, for me, Tron was a massive thing. And, you know, and it really did pave the way, as far as I'm concerned, for like the whole computer graphic thing. Because it
hadn't such
really
a huge
been
compliment.
Done.
Yeah.
It is.
And I hear it quite often, actually. Mm-hmm. People, you know, make all kinds of comments about Tron because it is corny. But it's an honest, simple story. And when you see it blown up on Blu-ray, I was at a little show in a little city, and I saw these little tiny kids. They must have been like 3 and 4, dressed up as, I think one was Batman, one was Darth Vader, but they stopped dead in their tracks because on a big screen, Blu-ray Tron was showing.
That's
and
amazing.
they didn't know what it was, but it was mesmerizing.
It was, it was groundbreaking at the time.
It was.
I mean, now that I watch it again, I can kind of pick it apart, and I'm like, I know how they did this, I know how they did that, but back then, you were transported into the digital world. You were in the computer with the characters, and you're just like, wow. Oh my God! And needless
because
to say,
before then you had the Star Wars.
The
right.
Sorry, go on. Effects from Star Wars.
Did you just say the Star Wars? like you're 80.
The Star Wars.
Back then we had the Star Wars.
Oh, behave.
Are they jumping on you, Paul?
They always do. They're so mean to me, Cindy. They're always mean to me.
Don't play the victim.
Oh, Rob. Rob, he's got someone on his side.
They gang up
on
me. Yeah. Yes, they gang up. See now, yes, it's 2 against 2 now. So,
I can hear it. I'm with you, Paul. I'll stick.
Yeah, see, just wait till later. Indiana Jones or James Bond? Yeah, you wait.
Wait till later, Paul. It'll be 3 against 1.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll see. Anyway, but anyway,
it was groundbreaking. So that made it almost impossible to play. I mean, but I remember telling the director, I said, look, I got a small tech background. I don't know what the hell I'm saying. If I don't know what I'm saying, how is anybody else going to know what I'm saying? And he said, the movie's not for them. I said, well, maybe they won't come to the movie. Yeah. You know, we got to split the difference here. And I lost the argument on one line. And to this day, the audience laughs their butts off when they hear it.
Uh-oh.
Because you can hear me choking on the line. I said to him, I can't say this. This is stupid. Don't say that to the director when he's also the writer. You're not going to win. And the line is, oh, Tron, I knew there wasn't a circuit built that could hold you. And
oh, boy.
And you can hear me choking, and the audience cracks up. Because if you say it with conviction, you can sell it. But I was like, oh, my God. You could tell I was not in the moment there.
Well, the computers have only really sort of the computers. Everything's there at the moment. I don't know why, but computers said, computers themselves have really only just started to sort of even show up in people's homes. And for the most part, you know, they were the ones in the homes were ones that, you know,
little boxes work. With green numbers at my dad's right. one. And I'm like, what are you playing with that for? What is that, a new CB? I mean, it doesn't do anything because it wasn't connected yet.
Right. And it was such a mystery anyway. I mean, how would they work and everything? And by bringing Tron in and making something so visually appealing as well, like the big bright colors.
Well, that's a question I had because, like you said, you were on the set. Nowadays, it's commonplace for actors to act opposite something that hasn't been rendered yet, that doesn't exist. You're talking to a tennis ball on a stick. But back then, this was not the norm. So how did you... feel.
Well, I can name a few actors I'd rather work with a tennis ball or a stick.
Oh, do
quite
go
frankly,
on.
I there's one actor I have in mind where I could never look him in the eye because if I look him in the eye, you could hear me say, "Oh, just shut up, please shut up," so I can get my line up. So I would pick a point in the middle, you know, where the third eye is supposed to be. That's where I would look. But no, on the set, you know, the reality was really difficult to find. Obviously, you know. So and again, I didn't rehearse. I didn't look ahead. I'm like, whatever, just put me there, and I'll get the first take because that's the only one you're going to believe. And we found the reality in each other's eyes. One funny thing, it went back to my broadcast background. We were looking, we were on the Solar Sailor, and which was just a little riser, a black riser in the middle of a giant black warehouse. And Steven Lisberger, the director, comes up and says, "You guys are looking in three different directions. How come? How can we sell this?" And I said, "See that, you know, grip? That get a roll of tape, drag it on the floor, and we'll look at that. I mean, it's not, you know, complicated. Right. Just give us a point of vision." But that was the one day I came in that morning and I wouldn't even read the sides anymore. I just, okay, what are we doing today? He says, "Okay, you guys are on the Solar Sailor. You're crossing the Game Sea. Morgan, you're flying the ship. Go." And I raised my hand and said, "Okay, I just got to ask, what the hell are you talking about?
Right.
No ship, no sea, no nothing. The thing that I was flying was a banquet table covered in black felt."
This is amazing.
And I said, "What exactly are we doing here?" And he said, "Just do anything. They will fill it in later." So I had to see something, because if I lie, everybody knows it. I can't lie. So in my mind, I saw a soundboard. And
right.
in my, because it's about the same, roughly the same size. And mm-hmm. in my mind, I saw slides and potentiometers and just the different things I would use on a soundboard. And that's what I was looking at. And then somehow that was maneuvering this device forward. So I had to see something.
Nice. Actually, you were all looking at that giant Mickey Mouse head that they eventually rendered in on the landscape.
All of those Easter eggs that came out later. I mean, you get those animators and you wrap them up in a room way too long and things are going to happen.
Right.
Things happen when you lock somebody in a room way too long. It'll come out. There's a Pac-Man in one scene. I don't know if you saw that.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I mean,
there is. I think I missed that.
Sark is doing, David Warner is doing one of his very incredibly powerful
love David Warner
scenes. And in the background, you see a little Pac-Man go across the screen.
That's
brilliant.
It's like that damn Pac-Man upstaging me again.
Now, David Warner was one of the actors I didn't have to work hard to figure out what I was doing. When he told me I was going to die, I believed him. He's that strong.
Yeah.
The rest of the time, I had to make some choices. What would I be? And I just kept thinking, grew up on a desert island, doesn't know anything. And if a human being were to make a program, some of the memories, some of the perceptions, some of the thoughts would be infused in that program. So when I saw Flynn, Jeff Bridges, come mm-hmm. on the ship, I recognized him, but I didn't know why. I had to make some choices along the line, because otherwise, you know, it would just be, it wouldn't work.
Were given quite a bit of freedom as far as sort of the character development then, really.
We weren't told a damn thing. I mean,
yes, okay.
there was nothing.
Oh, it's the same as this show.
It's classic movie making.
Yeah,
that's the thing. It's like, but when you're dealing with that, it's like you're creating something totally new. So it's in a space that hasn't existed before.
Right.
Yeah, and so then, you have to make it up in your brain.
And make it real, you know, as real as possible. And it was very, very important. I did the press junket. Bruce couldn't, Jeff couldn't. I did it by myself, city to city to city, going to television stations and radio stations, trying to explain what this movie was. And I had nothing to fall. So my fallback story would be, do you remember The Wizard of Oz, how Dorothy's in this black and white world, and suddenly she gets thrown into this world in color, and all the people she knew in the other world are there, but a little different. It's just indifferent. So that's how I would explain it.
That makes sense.
Referencing the Wizard of Oz. At least it was something that people could recognize that for, you know, just any point of reference.
That's a classic tale. And I mean, we grew up on Tron, so it's a big part of my childhood. It's a big part of geek culture. We still reference it every day, you know, nearly every day. And for a lot of people, that's the Wizard of Oz, but it's a classic tale that keeps coming back, which is why I think it resonates with so many people and continues to this day to be important to so many people.
It is. It's an innocent story. It's a classic. It's not overcomplicated. You don't have to wonder what the hell the writer's doing and why there's a hole in the script so wide you could drive a truck through it. I mean, it's just a simple little, you know, love story and a little love triangle. They get in, they get out, and that's, you know, very, very easy to comprehend. And I think it ended up being classic because people fell in love with it.
So, Cindy, I'm going to be corny for a second. I'll take full responsibility for this question. Cindy, do you fight for the users?
Damn right I do. I fired all my texts a year ago. I got so sick and tired of my texts. Well, and they made the mistake of doing a couple things that were very naughty, is as far as I got other words that are far more direct. And I took over all my social media at first, and then I took over my website. And somehow I got a Nessus spyware and malware that infected my entire system. And I mean every drive in my home.
Oh.
And for weeks, I was pushing them out. And I was on the phone with Apple Tech and AT&T Tech. And then finally, after wiping my drives four times, thank God I had a backup drive. And I finally went, wait a minute. I know where it is. I know where they stuck it. And I went, it's in the router. And I ran out to the Target, got another router, different company, but gave it the same name as the old router. And I watched, and when I booted up my computer, I was sorry about the train. It's actually far away. It's just very loud. When I booted up, I saw emails go from one of my email accounts to the other, fly across my screen twice, and I got screen caps of some of the stuff. And then they were locking me out of my email accounts and social media accounts. And I said, "That's it." I found an old 30-pin iPad, took it downstairs to my car, booted it up on the way to the AT&T store, and I said, "Give me your cheapest phone." And I went in and I set up in the store 2-step password authentication on everything.
So, wow. You know, had Tron been that, we wouldn't have that problem.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't say password, like it's a good thing.
You know, you're just getting attacked by the MCP, and ultimately.
No.
I thought you were about to say that I went into the digital world, I got Clue, I got Tron, and we figured it out because you're going there.
No, you had me believing. I don't ask boys questions anymore. I do it myself.
As I say, she sounds like she's well in control of what needs to happen. She knows what's going on.
I haven't set up my VPN yet, but I will because I've got somebody working. I'm getting some advice on that.
That's one of the best ways.
You guys know I got to do that now. So, So
Yuri lives indeed.
Yuri does live. Yeah, she does.
Well, my dad taught me. My dad was a test equipment builder. He fled Europe before World War II and got here, and with a year and a half of high school, he ended up running a plant. A couple thousand people worked for him just because I thought everybody's dad. You could hand him literally anything, and he could take it apart and put it back together and show you how to fix it. He gave me a couple basic rules, like having extra parts when you put it back together is not a bonus. That you screw it up somewhere. You know, he taught me how to lay out the parts when you take it apart. And so he taught me some basics going along. I worked for him in the factory wiring and soldering circuit boards for Arctic snowmobiles when I was going through college. So I got some basic information.
It's definitely enough that you can compound and you can build off of that type of stuff. It's good to have that in the back knowledge.
Oh, really? You want to see what I can do with a roll of tinfoil? You know, when the earthquake came through L.A. and nobody had a signal on their television. I was the only one who had a signal, and I didn't tell them why because I was out of tinfoil. But
we're going to have to give – she's now MacGyver.
Yeah.
You got it. I mean, I couldn't get a signal in a security building. I was in about 4 years ago, and I got a hold of AT&T, and I said, "Give me a roll of tinfoil." Somebody should have got in here and set up relays. I can do it for you.
Right.
Wow.
That's great.
Well, you guys know that stuff. So yeah I think, you know, there was a big scandal. I'm sure you heard Google. Somebody sent out a memo. Women are biologically different. So, and then they were going to have a Tommy. And there's all kinds of discrepancies and people see things different way. I think there's a big rainbow of perspectives, and it covers, it's not black and white, but I think it's like holding something in your hand. I think, you know, men and women, different people, you need different people with different points of view so you can turn it and get a new aspect on the problem.
Yeah, you need multiple perspectives.
Multiple perspectives will give you a much richer understanding. And I think there's nothing wrong with collaboration. And that's why I think so far outside the box, sometimes I don't even see the box. And that gets me in trouble.
What's in the box?
Forget the box.
What's in the box?
You know, if it doesn't work, you know, I'm right over the tinfoil. I've got a few pieces of I lost my dad's toolkit that he gave me, which was made me brokenhearted. But I put together. It's fascinating what you can make a tool out of these. So, all my tweezers are broken.
There's a lot of times I've reached into, and I've needed something, and I don't have it, and you just have to find something that kind of looks like it, but it'll hold up and be. You can use it to at least pull off the job. So that's. That's the most.
Unless
important
it weighs
thing.
Over 70 pounds in the wall, you know? then you need to do it.
I'll
like
get
more.
It sorted out.
So while we're still in this kind of like Techitron thing, let me touch into a little philosophical tech ground with you, Cindy.
Sure.
Now, if you could enter the digital world like your character Yuri, especially we see it in the news every day, people getting hacked, the emails, the this, the that. If you could go in. As yourself, Cindy Morgan, you're going into the net, into the web, whatever. Mm-hmm. What would you change? Yeah, you're on the grid. What is Cindy Morgan going to do? What change would you affect on the world if you
my
could?
Yuri would first go and secure my position, because I know how vulnerable. If I do very little work on my Mac anymore, I do almost everything. I do the creative work there, but I do my communication through my phone because they got a fraud department and they say they can back me up. I would go in and back up. Can I tell you something? By making mistakes, I've learned the greatest lessons. I trip over information, and there it is. And then from there, you know, the question is to, without malice and without pointing fingers or a particular point of view that sounds borders on the religious, I would communicate the information from my position. This is where the good news is. This is where the hard news is, and this is how to defend yourself. Just like, you know, my father, you know, told me to lock the car doors, you know, that's what you tell people. You know, just the simplest facts are blown by, and people become victimized. And it's so difficult for people of a certain age because of the lack of experience in a certain area. And this goes across all, it's not just retired people, you know. Now, law enforcement must wear body cams, and a lot of them, and dash cams, and become familiar with a new way of operating while they're on camera. Not everybody's comfortable being on camera all the time. So it's a brave new world, and certainly the information age. And what I would do is secure a position and just say, look, you know, here are the basics, you know, and this is what the bad guys look like. And like anything else, once you set up a profile, if somebody sends this or asks this or that, one of the texts I had was like, just give me your Google password and your IP address, and I'll fix this and that. And I said,
nope.
What are you, crazy? And how stupid do you think I am? No. Oh, but I'm helping. No, you're helping. My dad had an expression. If somebody's trying to help you too much, chances are they're helping themselves.
Yeah.
So get the hell out of there. You know, right. So there are a few key phrases and a few key things to know. That means they're up to no good. But because technology is advancing exponentially and in becoming integrated in everything, and if you don't have an online backup, you don't exist, basically. It's a little scary for a lot of people. So just like when I went into college and I knew nothing and had a stammer, just break it down to the basics and start from there. And then, it's like telling people to lock their doors, you know. That's simple.
Well, see, now, a lot of people sort of know you as Lacey Underall or Yuri. They're sort of the probably your most known characters.
Oh, absolutely. And most people don't think that's me in both. It took a long time. Nobody knew that was me in both films.
Oh, really?
They're kind of different. Lacey and Yuri are worlds apart.
Yes. As far as characters are concerned, yes. But you've also done voice. You've voiced a couple of animations. As well as obviously your DJ background, your meteorology and all that. What for you was probably what did you enjoy the most?
Oh gosh.
I'm sorry.
It's almost hard to say, but I can tell you. Let me think. You know, everybody says, "Well, it's like asking what my favorite pet was." You know, or my favorite. But you know, it's that first day when you first get a job, or you start back into something, and I'm not technically able to announce anything. But if you look at my IMDb page, I'm going to be on camera in several episode arc of a series that's a period
Knight's
piece.
End. I say Knight's End, Gonora, Countess of Normandy.
I can't really say anything about it because I'm not allowed to say anything yet.
Sure.
But, cannot confirm or deny.
Yes. It's in pre-production.
Some is. Yeah.
Maybe. It's all right. No one really listens to our show. You're fine.
And it's a period piece set in the year. I think it's 1,000. It's not 1066 because that would be what? The invasion. I wasn't good in history or geography.
That was Harold on the. Battle of Hastings, 1066.
It's right around in that era. So I'm so looking forward to this. And I said, you know, I don't honestly and do accents very well. I did an Irish Spring commercial and that wasn't even very good. I had to do it about 1,000 times, literally 1,000 times. So and they said, well, they're choosing to use non-regional dialect Americans. So I said, well, okay, it's gonna be like Kevin Costner and
Prince of Thieves.
Yeah.
So but
and
as
it
long
worked.
As you don't but as
so,
long as
so you you're yeah. gonna have a British accent?
No, I said, I can't do it. I can't do it well. Unless you want to coach me, where are you from, dude?
My voice, my accent's gone. No, I mean, where I'm from, it was horrible.
I was like, we can clearly hear it.
No, because when I started doing Ghost Hunters, I had to start enunciating, and I had to lose some of my regional accent, which...
Yes.
When I've spoken to like friends who I went to school with, and they just sound so common and it's horrible.
What area are you from?
Well, I was Southeast London.
Southeast London, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and I know Hastings because I used to go there for we used to have a little holiday home down in down by Hastings, which is how I knew the 1066 and Harold, how there's potentially three ways he died and all this sort of thing. I know. So yes, but.
I was wondering how you were so well and incredibly educated. I mean,
yes, I just sounded really smart, and I really appreciate that.
I was getting ready to call you on that. I was like, man, I don't know where Paul pulled this from, but this is fantastic. Tell us more, Paul.
He's got quick Google skills. His Google foo is on par.
He's got skills on the googly.
I hate you. Anyway.
Did you just say you hate them?
Yeah.
Don't worry. It's a love-hate thing. We all hate each other.
I understand. They are horrible. So funny. But yeah, so every time you get to do something fresh and new, I don't know if it happens to you guys, but okay, it's like me when I get I had to get a second phone because for safety's sake, nobody gets my damn phone number. I've been hacked enough. I know it can be done with a smartphone, so nobody gets this number. But and I found out you can how many different ways. So I have a second phone for that a number I give to everybody and it's a droid. So it's the first time I'm working with a droid. And it's the Samsung S8 Plus, I am. It's like handing you guys a new toy. What does that feel like? It's like at first it's a little frustrating, but it's really exciting, and it's like, you know, it's that excitement you get from getting to do something new, getting to do something different. And people said, "Did you laugh on the set of Caddyshack all the time?" I said, "No, we were working, and it's pretty well like working with somebody if you play sports, somebody who's a lot better than you are, you know." And staying in the scene took a lot of work. Thank God for some improv training and broadcasting where anything can and will happen, because a lot of actors went in there and tried to act. That didn't work here. It was the script was like tossed away, and you guys know most of it, half of it was improvised, and the best things were improvised.
Like, we know the name of the movie, and we know the name of the characters, and go. And
Well, there was a script, actually, you know, and they filmed some of that. But when you got to set, I'm going to say this in a very PC way. It was 1979. What the hell do you think was going on set?
There was no PC.
I was being old. So, and it's not that way anymore, not even remotely. They don't put up with that at all. But, right. But because we had brilliant actors, and it just happened. So, and there were four of the funniest men on the planet. Two of them did comedy the same way. One was a nightclub stand-up comic. This was his first film, his comeback film. And one was a guy holding on to a script with his dear hands going, "But I got lines here, Ted Knight. I got lines." He had no intentions of playing straight man to Rodney, but he did. And the thing was, I got a little bit of improv training from a great, great coach, Harvey Lembeck, whose son Michael is a director. Harvey was in the movie Stalag 17. Yeah, did you guys ever see that?
No,
I have not.
No, I'm too young.
It's a classic. It's a black and white classic. But he learned from a guy who was before me, named Phil Silvers, who learned the old vaudeville rules of comedy. There actually are comedy rules, and I got screamed at every day. Because do you hear how much I talk? Well, I kept yelled at, going, "Morgan, shut up! Stop going for the joke. You are the straight. You set up the joke. Learn how to do that." And he taught me one thing nobody could teach me to do: listen. So when I got into a scene with Chevy and he was improvising his butt. Did you guys see? You've seen Caddyshack, right?
Oh yeah.
You know the piano scene? Okay, this is how I found out about that scene. I was getting my makeup touched up down in Florida. It's got to be like 95. Plus those old giant Klieg lights. And Harold Ramis comes up to me and goes, "You see Chevy, he's sitting by the piano. Go sit down next to him." I said, "No." He goes, go sit down next to Chevy and just say, "Sing me a love song." I said, "We're burning daylight. Why are we doing this?" He goes, "Just say, sing me a love song." I said, "Fine." Sit down. Now, next time you watch it, watch my eyes. I go, "Sing me a love song." And I'm looking. And he snorts a salt, throws a tequila, and launches into the song. And I'm looking at him going, "What the hell?" And out of the corner of my right eye, I see the damn camera light on. I went, "Son of a gun, they're filming this." And I laughed to myself a little bit. And I went, "All right, you want to play? Let's play." And there's tequila in front of me. And I took a shot. It was tequila. And I had a big wad of gum in my mouth. And I blew a bubble in his face. And that was the button on the scene. That's how I found out we were filming the scene. No script, no rehearsal, not even the camera's going to be rolling.
That is fantastic.
Just pure magic.
But you can see, can see just where I realize. You can see me laugh a little bit because I go, "Son of a bitch, you're filming."
You got me.
See, this is great because one of the things I love doing when I watch movies, right after I'll go to IMDb and look at the trivia. So now you are our Caddyshack and Tron trivia. Next time we watch this, we're going to go, "Oh, Cindy told us about that."
Oh, yeah. Send me a message. There was always something going on. Tron was a lot different, where Caddyshack was so active and things were happening everywhere and you never knew if a camera was on you or not, or whether they generally followed the action, which turned out brilliantly. You can't plan on getting your actors all revved up and throwing them on camera and expect it to work. That's suicide. But in this case, we were struck by comedy lightning. It just worked.
Yeah.
And you know the gopher wasn't in the original script, in what we filmed.
Really?
No.
Was that added after, post, or in post?
Yeah.
Or?
There was one scene of Billy jumping at something, a puppet that was on the ground. Yeah. There was no animatronic gopher. That was a John Dykstra thing. When they got all the film back to Orion at the time, brilliant vignettes, awesome stuff. But the storyline was gone. The original storyline was about the caddies. Winning the caddy tournament. That was gone. That was on the cutting room floor. So in order to make it work, they had to create a new storyline, and that was Billy chasing the gopher, and they threaded that through
Cinderella
the
story.
Film.
Cinderella story.
So, I don't even think he had lines initially. He just started talking. When I went to see it, when I saw the premiere in New York, and he goes into that Gunga Galunga, and I'm looking and I'm going, "Holy crap, what is he doing?" It's like it's watching home movies of your relatives at a very bad picnic.
What this guy's doing.
Everybody loved it. Harold Ramis stopped me once. I was walking past the clubhouse. He goes, "Hey, come over here. Come here. Watch this." And I went, and I'm looking, and you can't hear what's the dialogue because we're too far away. But I'm looking, and Billy is taking a golf club and destroying the mums. He's whacking the
yes.
head of them. And all I can think is, how the hell are they going to reset the scene? That's what's going through my head. How are they going to match this? And what I didn't know is this was just one of those things that popped into Harold's head and said, hey, let's try this. Harold did that a lot. He would whisper in my ear, hey, try this. And there it would be. Just like the piano scene.
Go sit down. Being in the moment. Just being in the moment.
No, he was so good. But it put such... I don't know how he made it through. He was the only one who actually went home and went to sleep. He behaved himself relatively well, and he was prepared. He got the hell teased out of him. You know, did he look in the wrong end of the lens of the camera the first day? One thing did happen. Apparently, he set up his first shot, and he's like, "Yeah, why not? This will work." And the cameraman, not the cameraman, the cinematographer walked up to him and said, "Harold, you see all those wagons and trucks, and you want all that in your shot? No, well, you got to turn the camera over here, bud." There was a little bit of that. We all were learning on the fly. I had to learn to match my behavior in from take to take to take. And I said, "Why? I'm making it." No, this is not that kind of improv. We got to cut. So you got to match your. I mean, we were learning on the job.
It's good to
make
hear
it up as you go.
It's good to hear those warm and fuzzies about Harold Ramis. We all miss him so.
So much. And I have the rights to 1,700 behind the scenes photos that I've been talking about a book forever. It's stuck in, you know where it's stuck. But don't worry about it, because I talked to the guy whose photos they are, who's doing it with me, the editor of Caddyshack, and I said, Bill, William Carruth. I said, Bill, I'm going to start releasing this online. And it's yours and it's mine. We own the product. So just give me your permission and I'm going to start releasing it in progress to show that I'm not just blowing smoke here. I've got photos of the three-story fireball. They did blow up the golf course twice.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
You know, the first time, you know, I was close enough and I got this great photo that I'm putting in and I've got a really good high-res screen on my Mac, and I'm looking, and you see 300 extras running toward camera trying to get FaceTime, and only one, you know how that is, and I'm in the middle of an explosion, they don't care, and one person is standing there looking at the three-story column of smoke, and I'm looking in real close going, who's that? You know who it was? Me. I'm the only one who didn't give a rat's ass about the camera. I'm going, I could feel the impact of the blast, and I'm looking at this going, holy crap. And they go, okay, we're going to need all of you tomorrow. Because the next day they painted it green and blew it up again. And I said, hey, you don't need me. There's hundreds of people here. Because I could feel how... I got a picture of them mining the golf course with gasoline. I have a picture of the truck pumping gasoline into the ground.
Wow.
And I said, you don't need me. They said, yes, we do. I said, okay, I'll be here. Now, if you ever hear me agree that easily... You know I'm not going to be there, right?
yeah, sure, no problem. I'm in it.
Yeah, whatever you say. Thumbs up. And I was on the other side of the golf course, and I could hear this resounding blast because it really was. And another great picture, I would said to William Carruth, because we're going through these photos. I said, Bill, why is there's camera A, camera B. Why is there this big piece of plexiglass in front of camera A? He said, you never knew where the golf balls were going to go.
Wow.
God.
And I said, well, wait a minute, camera B, there's a little piece of rug in front of it. That's it. He goes, well, we didn't have anything else. So wow. you just never knew. You just had to stay in the scene and just be there, you know, and whatever happened.
Something like that. Like, so with like that movie, and you were talking earlier, just kind of one question, like the different levels of like the comedy.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
How did you jump, you know, talking about like Rodney Dangerfield and then going back to like the new comedy versus kind of the old comedy. How did that play out for you? I mean, you know, with, you know, kind of learning, I guess, from both of those different levels.
Actually, the lucky thing for me is Lacey sort of evolved. It was like a storybook preparation. They gave me all these lessons, none of which I could pick up because I never learned to dive. they had Warner Brothers screen To Have or Have Not for me, the old Humphrey Bogart, Lauren Bacall movie.
Okay.
And they said, watch Lauren Bacall. And she, you may not know the movie, but you'll know the line. And she's a young woman, and she walks up to Humphrey Bogart, who's a very worldly man, and she goes, if you want anything, just whistle. You know how to whistle, don't you? You just put your lips together and blow. And she knocks him over with that line. Says it without sexual innuendo, without guile, but knocks him on his ass. Mm-hmm. They said, that's Lacey.
Yeah, I think you just knocked me on my ass right here. And I'm like five states away, so good job.
Yeah.
So, it's just the confidence in the words.
The confidence in the words, and I learned how to do something in the audition process. The last audition, I went in and I realized I was the only one reading for Lacey. I said, "Holy crap! They really think I can do this. I'm going to get out of here. I can't be Lacey. I was set up with cousins for both of my proms. For Christ's sake, I can't do it." And I went, all right, calm down. Just whoever you read with, pray it's a guy. And I just told myself, just make him sweat. So I went in, and it was Doug Kenny, and I started reading with him. And I looked him dead in the eye, and when I saw that little trickle of sweat come down the side of his face, I knew I had the job.
Bingo.
Women know how to do that.
more in control of situations than sometimes we realize.
You realize, but you don't care at that point.
Right. At that point, you're like, okay, whatever.
As men, we know we're never truly in control. So.
Well, you know, I appreciate a give and take. I don't want to be in control. That's exhausting, you know. But you know, yeah. there is a healthy give and take. So that was, it was lucky to do two very different jobs. So lucky.
So of these great cinematic figures, these comedy legends that we were in the movies, like Bill Murray, Chevy Chase, Bruce Boxleitner, Jeff Bridges.
Bruce isn't a comedy legend.
No, but I mean, just as far as like he's a figure. I'm a huge Boxleitner fan. You know, Babylon 5, Bring It Back Alive. Like, yes, the box that rocks.
Yeah.
Of the like, we see these people on screen, and we, you know, it's a common thing. We put them on pedestals. Sometimes there's a little fan.
Sure.
You know, we're kind of like, oh, I don't want to talk to them. I don't want to bother them. Like, how are these guys? Yeah, the fan worship. How were they to work with? Now you don't have to lambast anyone, but like, who was your favorite person to work with?
No. You know, when I found out I was doing Caddyshack, I stopped watching SNL. I just stopped because I didn't want to have any preconceptions. I didn't want to go in there intimidated. I didn't really know Bruce. I'd seen Jeff, and quite frankly, I couldn't understand how that hippie got Jessica Lange in the King Kong movie. But then you meet him, and you realize he's so completely charismatic that he's just the most lovable, honest human person ever. So it totally made sense working with him. So you know, twice I was intimidated, and I made an ass of myself. Once I did a pilot with Telly Savalas, and I had a loop the whole day's work the next day because my voice was up here. And the only other time was I went to dinner at somebody. This is like name dropping palooza over here, but there were like 12 people at dinner at Kirk Douglas's house. There was Kirk Douglas. There was Dinah Shore. There was the head of the studio and Cary Grant. He was introduced to me, and he said a few words, and all I could say was, "You sound just like Cary Grant." And I'm like, shut up, stop talking right now. I mean, I had a line about Cary Grant and Caddyshack. I couldn't make any sense at all. And then I was intimidated and just told myself to shut up. But on set, that becomes a risk to have any thoughts like that have nothing to do with who you are. Oh, you asked me how I responded to the different comics differently, and they'd never answered your question. The way it was as Lacey developed, she almost became audience point of view. Because, you know, I'd look at Rodney and I'm like, okay, I'm in the scene. I'm going to answer him. Hey, Dal, you live alone? And I went, no, pointed at Ted. You know, I would just follow along when Chevy was singing the song. I mean, I just played it as it really was. So it was kind of a lucky character to play Lacey, because Lacey was just walking through this going, I'm not a part of this, but as long as I'm stuck here.
Yeah, it's a different way. It's a different perspective to look at it. Now looking at your character as kind of being how we get to experience the movie, I guess you're kind of the guide through that.
I mean, Lacey was reacting, you know, she wasn't, Lacey was just, you know, we all evolved into versions of our character at some point too, which was awesome, because if they really thought I was Lacey, I could back them up easy. Right. I responded to Ted as Ted. In the beginning, Ted was like my Polish uncle. You know, he knew I was Polish, and he actually talked like that. So, Cindy, let me tell you what this is about, and I'd listen, you know. And but at the end, he was fed up with all of us, because the party, the mother of all rap parties, was every night. And one of the last scenes we shot was where Ted Knight's boat gets wrecked by Rodney.
Right.
I was in the dressing room, and I get called out to the set, and Ted's laying into me going, where were you? We were looking for you. I said, Ted, I was in the room with the door with my name on it. Maybe you should have looked there. So we all evolved into little, you know, he was legitimately angry with everyone. All the goofing around, all the ad-libbing, all the, and you know what? I hate to say it, but it kind of worked because he wasn't playing angry. He really was.
Right. He's just furious every scene.
Well, oh, yeah. That is we're genuine waiting. Anger.
No, he was really pissed.
Yeah. That's neat to hear how just kind of being able to go through that and evolve your character and evolve yourself and kind of learn and grow with it. That's
the only way to do it, or you're going to end up on the cutting room floor. You better figure out what the hell's going on really fast.
Low like water. Least amount of resistance. Just get through it. Kind of.
Well, get through it, but also be there. You know. Mm-hmm. You know.
Have a presence.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
You know, make sure you're not overplaying, but playing the moment. And since I was the straight to four of the funniest men on the planet, I reacted. And my reaction, the stuff I did with Chevy, my reactions to Chevy were some of my best work. Because well, I wasn't initiating
not react
it.
With that.
What's that?
It's like, how can you not react in a scene like that when it's kind of off the cuff and you're, like you were explaining with it being a kind of learning as you go and then finding, realizing you are in the moment and that moment is the moment that's going to be presented.
Exactly. So, you're absolutely there. So, I mean, that was just really lucky. I've known better actors and people with better connections. So I got really lucky and I'm really happy to be there. Where I'm right now is running my own websites. I've got a little bit of a push to get that book, you know, finished. It's done. How many, I've written 3 books just in the, let's see, couple of minutes, 52 minutes I've been talking to you guys. So.
She's multitasking.
Yeah, no, what I mean is the stories come easily. It's already storyboarded. It's already laid out. I've already chosen the photos. And the way I'm doing it like a coffee table book. I'm taking the reader by the hand. And I said, come with me. I want to show you what it was like showing up on the set. I want to show you, you know, how it was when I first arrived and who this guy was and who this guy was and what happened there and there and there. And I've got the photos to back it up.
Well, okay. So you've got you're working on a book, but do you have anything else you want to like tell our listener? That you know,
singular.
That one person who's listening to the show. But is there anything you're doing? Any events you're doing? Anything you want to sort of plug while you're on here?
That I can speak about openly. Things are happening. Lovely things are happening. I'm very very pleased. And CindyMorgan.com just sends people to the right sites. Most of it's on my Facebook page. I've got like 10 of them, but my main page. And what I can say that's inappropriate, I put on my cat's Facebook page, Oscar's World, and he's saying it. And my cat named Moosey didn't make it, and it was because I live in a security building now, and you guys know why. And right. You know, the stalking took a hard toll on him. Seriously hard. And the new cat who came in is an absolute loon. He's a criminal. He has not yet to be convicted. 2 weeks he's in this house. I've 2 weeks he jumps. And I thought he was kidding. I thought, you know, I could just miss him and he comes back. He jumps to my 50-inch Vizio, grabs it with his top paws, shakes it, and kicks it back with his lower paw, rips the thing off the wall. And down on the floor and was lucky enough to hit the motherboard. There's a motherboard in those screens.
Wow.
He smashed it.
Wow.
So now I've got another one. I've got a Samsung up there. But I moved the furniture away from it so he can't get a running jump. And I have to be careful now because walking between my kitchen and my living room, it's a little bit narrow. And that little... can I say bastard?
You can say whatever you want to say.
You say whatever you want.
That little bastard.
That bastard.
Dives under my feet on purpose all the time. Actually tripped me 4 weeks ago to Thursday. And I went careening forward. I grabbed onto a chair, which I forgot I hung all my purses on. So it was weighted to swing backwards. And I went down and pulled a hamstring because of that little jerk. And I'm just getting back to myself now. He's adorable. He's cute. And then, you know, and he goes through all of my things, steals memorabilia. I've got beautiful dinosaur plushies from the Field Museum of Chicago. He stole those first. But, you know, when you see a little cat run around with a dinosaur running around with him by the throat, it's hard to not hate him. So, and his page is Oscar's World. Moosey had his page, Moosey Morgan, but Lucy's no longer with us. So
yeah, check Oscar's page, because the stuff he's stealing, he's putting on eBay, and he's like, hey, I got Cindy Morgan memorabilia.
I know he is. I know it for a fact. He's smart. He knows all the words, and he's doing it on purpose. So I'm whenever I have to say anything inappropriate, it goes to my cats. I'll let them say it. So now, Cindy. Yes, sir.
We could talk to you for hours on this show, but this is Three Geeks Senate. We celebrate our geek nerdery. We definitely want to thank you for taking the time out to talk with us, so we could geek out with someone who's been a fixture in our world for the things that we love. We have a couple of questions.
Make me sound like a lamp.
Yes, well, without lamps you can't see. We got a couple of simple A or B questions that we like to people, just to see where you fall on the line. And I know Paul's one of them is really important to him. But let's start first. Okay, Cindy.
All right.
Star Wars or Star Trek?
What is this, the Big Bang Theory and I'm Penny?
It is. What you're doing to me? Exactly. We're the geeks, you're the pretty blonde. Which one is it?
Yeah. Star Wars or Star Trek? In college, it was Star Trek. Afterwards, Star Wars. But early Star Wars.
Good answer. Okay. Next one. Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter?
In college, anybody who read Lord of the Rings was a weirdo. But now, I love the way what they did with it. I love Peter Jackson's work. It's beautifully shot. It's beautifully done. What was my other choice? Harry Potter. Kind of cool. Kind of fascinating. Let me see. If I had to make a choice, early Harry Potter. When it got dark, it was too real for me. It was like watching the news.
Copy that.
What about Jeff or Bruce?
Jeff. Why did
they
not hesitate?
Well, you didn't hesitate at all with that one.
The dude will abide.
Yeah, all right,
Paul. I'm gonna let you.
He's awesome guy.
Paul, I'm gonna let you ask this next one, because I know you want to. Go for it.
All right, Paul.
James Bond.
Yeah.
Or Indiana Jones.
Oh, James Bond.
Oh
yes, nailed it.
Oh.
People said who should be the next James Bond, and I said me, or at least make me M.
You should definitely be in there, definitely.
Yeah.
You got my vote. And Gillian Anderson.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Good choice.
Yeah. That would.
Maybe not a traditional Bond girl, but wouldn't it be great to play M?
Oh, God, yeah. Well, they had
Dame Judi Dench isn't done yet, though. She's still busy. Yeah.
See, M is the better choice.
No, there's a new M. No, Ralph Fiennes is now M.
Did you say Ralph?
Isn't it Ralph? It's my pronunciation.
They're giving you a really hard time.
They do. They do that.
It's Voldemort. It's okay. It's Voldemort.
It is. It's Voldemort.
Voldemort.
Well, guys, this has been an awesome. Now, cross promotion is a beautiful thing.
Oh, yes.
And if I got sent in whatever format you want to send, it's going to go up. And all I need from you guys is the what, when, where, and how. Your names, the podcast, the name of the cast, where the people can find it, where they will find other podcasts of yours. Would that be a trade? Can you make that
trade? Yes.
Absolutely.
Of course. We're going to plug the shit out of your stuff. Don't worry.
And I'm finding that photo, and I'm going to have it up. I'll send it to you, Paul.
Would you? Yeah.
Make sure Paul gives it to you if he doesn't like it.
Yeah, we'll do.
Photo. It's with I'm with Paul and K-9. It's adorable. At Phoenix Comic-Con.
You are a diamond. Thank you so much for joining us.
Too. This was so much fun. I could talk to you forever, too. So, actually, I've got a Star Trek on in the background. It's episode 6, so I'm not so sure, but, I beg your pardon. It's episode 3. 1, 2, 3. Yeah, because 4 was the first one we saw, so this is episode 3.
Search for Spock.
Okay. All right.
Very cool.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us.
I enjoyed this and anytime. And good luck. And Paul, wait till you see this picture. You'll love it.
Okay. I'll see you. See you soon.
All right.
Thank you, Cindy.
Bye, guys. Bye-bye.
For more Geek Nerdery, make sure you search for 3 Geek Senate on iTunes or your favorite podcast app.
Or you can follow us on social media. Simply follow at 3 Geek Senate. That's the number, 3 Geek Senate, whether it's your Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.
And we need you to go to iTunes and please subscribe. It's free. We need you to give us a review, 5 stars if you could, and share with your friends and let us know what you think.
My name is Brian J. Cano.
And my name is Paul Bradford.
And I'm Robert Buxar.
And we'll see you guys next time on the Senate Room Floor. Good night, everyone.